Warning. Warning.
The following podcast is for educational purposes only. Please consult your doctor if you have any medical needs. Information included in this podcast could be wrong, and any corrections offered would be welcomed. Thank you.
Warning. Warning.
Welcome, listeners, to the first ever podcast of My Robot Medic. I'm Mordecai, and I'll be your AI helper that guides you on your journey through medicine. On the first series of the show, we'll be studying internal medicine, which is defined as the study, diagnosis, and treatment of conditions that affect the internal organs. As always, through the series, we will begin with a story highlighting some important points about the topic. Then we will learn about its definition, clinical signs and symptoms, how to diagnose it, and finally, how to treat it. We'll try to have fun along the way, so please, if you like what you hear, share the podcast with your classmates, colleagues, or anyone interested in the topic. So, shall we begin?
Internal medicine, allergy, and immunology. Episode 1, asthma. Good morning. Can I get 2 cappuccinos and 1 espresso, please?
Sure thing. Here's your total. Would you like cash or card?
Card, please.
Great. Please have a seat and I'll bring it right over.
Sounds like a bad cough you got there.
It's the cold. I always react this way ever since I was a child. It triggers something in me. Plus, it doesn't help that Frank smokes like a chimney. Seriously, I had to roll down the window in the freezing cold multiple times when we drove up here.
Ooh, I know. You certainly gave him an earful the third time he did it. Poor guy is out there now, can you believe it? Smoking in this weather? Remind me to get him patches or something.
Oh my God, he looks so cold. Okay, now you're making me feel bad.
Yeah? Well, don't. He's the one who dragged us up here for his birthday. Seriously, Emma, what exactly about my physique made him think I could ski?
I was thinking about it all last week. You know I'm afraid of heights. By the way, thanks for those pills. It really calmed me down. The thought of those ski lifts, my legs dangling helplessly and nothing but white as far as your eyes can see. Yikes. It makes my heart race.
Don't mention it. It looks like our coffee is ready. Let me go get Frank.
No, it should be me. I want to apologize to him for yelling at him earlier.
Just the person I wanted to see. Listen, Emma, I just want to say sorry for smoking in the car earlier. I really didn't think it was a big deal, but it clearly was. I should have respected your boundaries, and I should have asked first. You know, it was Mike who told me later that you were, like, allergic to it or something? Emma, are you okay? Oh my God. Hold on. Damn it. Hold on, Emma.
"911, what's your emergency?"
The definition of asthma.
A chronic disease in which the bronchial airways in the lungs become narrowed and swollen, making it difficult to breathe. It is characterized by recurrent episodes of dyspnea, cough, and wheeze, which is reversible.
The epidemiology of asthma.
It affects around 5% to 8% of the population, and it can affect people of all ages, but it is most commonly diagnosed in children under the age of 18. In fact, asthma is one of the most common chronic conditions in childhood, and its prevalence has been increasing in recent decades. Black children are nearly three times more likely to have asthma compared to white children. Most childhood asthmatics either grow out of asthma in adolescence or suffer much less as adults. A significant number of people develop chronic asthma late in life since the prevalence of asthma increases with age.
The causes of asthma.
Although the exact cause of the underlying asthma is unknown, it is thought to be a combination of genetic and environmental factors. What we can say for certain, however, are the factors that initiates the attacks. For example, research shows that by far around 80% of all asthma cases are triggered by allergies. Allergic asthma, sometimes called atopic asthma, is asthma triggered by allergens like pollen, pets, and dust mites. Atopy refers to the genetic tendency to develop allergic diseases such as allergic rhinitis, asthma, and eczema. A child with one atopic parent has a 25% risk of atopy, and a child with two atopic parents has a 50% risk of atopy. Other precipitants of asthma include irritants such as tobacco smoke, air pollution, or strong odors, infections such as the common cold or flu, exercise or physical activity, emotional stress or strong emotions such as laughing or crying, changes in the weather, especially cold air, certain medications like non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs or beta blockers, and finally, hormonal changes in women such as during menstrual periods or pregnancy.
The symptoms of asthma.
The three most common symptoms of asthma include coughing, dyspnea, and wheezing. 1. Coughing, which is both diurnal or during the day and nocturnal or during the night. In diurnal coughing, the peak flow or symptoms vary throughout the day. A marked reduction of peak flow in the morning is common and may tip the balance into developing a serious attack despite having normal peak flow at other times. Nocturnal coughing results from the natural narrowing of the airways during sleep, which increases airflow resistance due to being in a supine position while sleeping. Allergens may drain from the sinuses into the airways and further exacerbate the narrowing. 2. Dyspnea or shortness of breath because of increased production of mucus due to the inflammatory mediators caused by mast cell and basophil degranulation. 3. Wheezing. The third symptom commonly seen in asthma occurs as air is inhaled through an inflamed and mucus-filled airway, which produces a whistling noise when breathing. The increased airflow resistance gives rise to the characteristic wheezing synonymous with asthma.
The pathophysiology of asthma.
To understand the signs to look out for in order to diagnose asthma, you must first know the pathophysiology of an asthmatic. Total lung capacity, or TLC, is the volume of air contained in the lung at the end of maximal inspiration. It is calculated by a formula that contains four other data sets. The first data set is inspiratory reserve volume, or IRV. Inspiratory reserve volume is the amount of air you can inspire beyond what you normally breathe in. The second data set is tidal volume, or VT. Tidal volume is the amount of air you breathe in and out normally. The third data set is expiratory reserve volume, or ERV. It is the amount of air you can expire beyond what you normally breathe out. The fourth and last data set is residual volume, sometimes also called reserve volume, or RV. It is the amount of air remaining in the lungs after maximal expiration. Adding up IRV plus VT plus ERV plus RV will equal TLC. The normal ranges of these values will depend on an individual's age, sex, ethnicity, height, and weight. Due to the inflammation of the inner mucosal membrane alongside the smooth muscle contraction, also called bronchospasms, and the lumen being partially filled with mucus, asthma is classified as an obstructive lung disease, meaning asthmatics find it difficult both by breathing in and by breathing out. The bronchospasm and mucus plugs result in more and more air getting trapped in the lungs. Since the total lung capacity, or TLC, remains constant and ranges between 4 to 6 liters, the trapped air leads to, by definition, an increase of the reserve volume, which in turn leads to an increase in the expiratory reserve volume, since there is more volume of air to breathe out. The RV and ERV being elevated relative to the VT and IRV eats up more and more of the TLC percentage. This is why many asthmatics commonly complain of not being able to draw a breath, because the vital capacity and inspiratory reserve volume has less space allocated to it in the total lung capacity. The result of all of this will be a drop in blood oxygen, since less oxygenated air is reaching the alveoli and the air trapped in the lungs is oxygen poor. A physiological response kicks in, and the body increases the respiratory rate to try and counteract the lack of O2. Now let's get back to the signs you'll need to look out for.
The signs of asthma.
The signs can be separated into mild, moderate, severe, and those that are life-threatening due to respiratory failure. Let's start with the mild to moderate signs first. Tachypnea, or high respiratory rate, is a result of the physiological respiratory drive. It can also be seen and heard unaided. It sounds like this during auscultation. An audible wheeze, which is generated due to the narrowing of the airways. It sounds like this. A polyphonic wheeze can also be heard when auscultating the chest. It sounds high-pitched and musical in note, often like a whistle. It's polyphonic, meaning you can hear it at multiple points along the chest. Here is an example of a wheeze during auscultation. Keep in mind that asthmatics also find it hard breathing out the trapped air behind the bronchospasms and mucus plugs. So another sign you might see is an overinflated chest. This can also be percussed during an exam, since percussion notes are hyperresonant in lungs that are overinflated and duller in lungs that are more empty. See if you can notice a difference. The first sound is of a chest that is being percussed at the point of maximum expiration. Here is a hyperinflated chest that is being percussed at the point of maximum inspiration. Finally, let's hear both back to back.
The severe signs of asthma.
Tachypnea so high that they are unable to complete sentences, typically over 25 breaths a minute. A pulse rate of over 110 beats per minute. Peak expiratory flow, which is the amount of air you can forcefully blow out after inhaling as much as you can, will be lower in severe asthma, coming in at around 33% to 50% of predicted. Remember, predicted levels of peak expiratory flow, like other lung function tests mentioned in the pathophysiology section, depend on the individual's age, sex, ethnicity, etc.
The life-threatening signs of asthma.
Silent chest, a pulse oxygen of below 92%, confusion, exhaustion, bradycardia, and cyanosis due to a partial pressure of oxygen below 8 kilopascals, but partial pressure of carbon dioxide that's higher at around 4.6 to 6 kilopascals. And finally, a peak expiratory flow of below 33% of predicted. Keep in mind that a key sign of respiratory failure is when there is an increase in the partial pressure of carbon dioxide.
The diagnosis of asthma.
If your likelihood of suspecting asthma is high, you can directly trial a short-acting beta-2 agonist like albuterol to see if the symptoms improve. If you have an intermediate level of suspicion, you can do some pulmonary function tests, or PFTs. PFTs include a variety of tests that check how well the lungs work. The most basic test is spirometry. A spirometry can identify the FEV1 and the FVC. Forced expiratory volume, or FEV, measures how much air a person can exhale during a forced breath. This is usually measured in seconds and noted by putting the corresponding second interval after the FEV. For example, FEV1, FEV2, FEV3, etc. Forced vital capacity, or FVC, is the total amount of air exhaled during the FEV test. By using those two measures, you can calculate the FEV1 to FVC ratio. We then compare it to the predicted normal for the individual's age, height, race, and sex. Once you get your patient's results, you can use albuterol or inhaled steroid like a budesonide and run the spirometry test again. If you notice an improvement of greater than 15% in FEV1, then that's diagnostic of asthma, since it shows the reversibility of the airway narrowing. Conversely, you can do a methacholine challenge test. Rather than opening the airway via the short-acting beta-2 agonist or steroids, we will now try to narrow it. The methacholine acts through muscarinic receptors in the lungs to induce bronchoconstriction. The logic states that since asthmatics have a lower threshold for bronchial hyperresponsiveness, then a low dose of methacholine that should be inconsequential for non-asthmatics should trigger bronchospasms in asthmatics. The test starts with a very small dose of methacholine, and depending on your response, the doses will be increased until either you experience a 20% drop in your FEV1 or you reach a maximum dose with no change in your lung function. If the patient's airways become constricted in response to the methacholine, it suggests that they have airway hyperresponsiveness, which is consistent with a diagnosis of asthma.
The management of asthma.
Initially, start with lifestyle changes. For example, help to quit smoking, avoid precipitants mentioned earlier, and aid weight loss if they are overweight. Make sure to check their inhaler technique. Teach to use a peak flow meter to monitor PF twice a day. The peak expiratory flow, also called peak expiratory flow rate, is a person's maximum speed of expiration. Educate to enable self-management by altering their medication, depending on their symptoms or PF. When prescribing medication, usually a step-like management plan is used, starting at the step most appropriate to severity, moving up if needed, or down if control is good for more than 3 months. Rescue courses of prednisolone may be used at any time. Please consult your local guidelines, but generally they all tend to follow this chronological order. Step 1. Occasional short-acting inhaled beta-2 agonist like salbutamol is required for symptom relief. If used more than once daily or nighttime symptoms are present, then go to step 2. Step 2, add standard dose inhaled steroid, for example, beclomethasone 200 to 800 micrograms every day, or start at the dose appropriate for disease severity and titrate as required. Move to step 3 if symptoms are still not in control. Step 3, add long-acting beta-2 agonist, for example, salmeterol 50 micrograms every 12 hours by inhaler. If there is still inadequate control, then continue the long-acting beta-2 agonist, but be sure to increase dose of beclomethasone to 800 micrograms every day. If no effect, then stop long-acting beta-2 agonist and continue with the 800 micrograms per day dose of beclomethasone and add either a leukotriene receptor antagonist like a montelukast or an oral theophylline. Step 4. Consider trialing the following. Beclomethasone up to 2,000 micrograms every day. Modified release oral theophylline, modified release oral beta-2 agonist tablets, oral leukotriene receptor antagonist in conjunction with previous therapy in earlier steps. Step 5. Add regular oral prednisolone, one dose daily at the lowest possible dose. Continue with high-dose inhaled steroids and then refer for specialist input. Here are more details about the medications used in the management of asthma. Beta-2 adrenoceptor agonists relaxes bronchial's smooth muscle by increasing cyclic AMP, and it acts within minutes. Salbutamol is best given by inhalation, either aerosol powder or by nebulizer, but may also be given orally or by IV. Side effects include tachyarrhythmias, decreased potassium, tremors, and anxiety. Long-acting inhaled beta-2 agonist like salmeterol or formoterol can help nocturnal symptoms and reduce morning dips. They may be an alternative to increase steroid dose when symptoms are uncontrolled. Side effects are the same as salbutamol, but they also have paradoxical bronchospasms. Corticosteroids are best inhaled to minimize systemic effects, for example, beclomethasone via spacer or powder, but may be given orally or by IV. They act over days to reduce bronchial mucosal inflammation, advised to rinse mouth after inhaled steroids to prevent oral candidiasis. Oral steroids are used acutely. Give high doses in short courses, for example, prednisolone, 40 mg every 24 hours orally for 7 days, and give longer-term courses in lower doses, for example, 5 to 10 mg every 24 hours, if control is not optimal on inhalers. Side effects of steroids are numerous, ranging from peptic ulceration, osteoporosis, growth suppression, and fractures, just to name a few. Aminophylline is metabolized to theophylline, which acts by inhibiting phosphodiesterase, thus reducing bronchoconstriction by increasing cyclic AMP levels. Cyclic AMP has a relaxation effect on smooth muscles. Try it as a prophylaxis at night orally to prevent morning dipping. Stick with one brand name since bioavailability varies. It is also useful as an adjunct. If inhaled therapy is inadequate in acute severe asthma, it may be given by IV. However, keep in mind it has a narrow therapeutic index, causing arrhythmias, abdominal pain, and fits when in the toxic range. Do an EKG to monitor and check plasma levels after 24 hours if IV therapy is used. Anticholinergics like ipratropium may reduce muscle spasms synergistically with beta-2 agonist, but are not recommended in current guidelines for chronic asthma. They may be of more benefit in COPD. Chromoglycate is a mast cell stabilizer and may be used as prophylaxis in mild and exercise-induced asthma. It must always be inhaled, especially in children. Leukotriene receptor antagonists like oral montelukast. One of the roles of leukotrienes, specifically leukotriene D4, is to trigger contractions in the smooth muscles lining the bronchioles. Their overproduction is a major cause of inflammation in asthma and allergic rhinitis. Leukotriene receptor antagonists blocks the effects of cystinyl leukotrienes in the airways by antagonizing the cyst-LT1 receptor. Anti-IgE monoclonal antibody, omalizumab, may be of use in highly selected patients with persistent allergic asthma. Given as a subcutaneous injection every 2 to 4 weeks, depending on dose, it is typically only prescribed by a specialist.
Time for the quiz.
Go back to the case story earlier. How many symptoms of asthma did you hear? What kind of medication do you think Emma took from her friend? How is the FEV1 to FVC ratio helpful when diagnosing an obstructive lung disease like asthma? Thank you for listening. If you liked what you heard, then please rate the podcast on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps the show out. We will continue with the allergy series, and we'll be learning about eczema on the next one. Take care.